Hello, welcome back to Clinicians Brief Partner Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Katie Berlin, and I'm here with our guest today, Matt Saloy. Matt, would you mind giving our listeners a little bit of information about who you are and what you do?
Yeah, great. Thanks so much, Katie. I'm Matt. I'm Chief Economist for the American Veterinary Medical Association. I have the great fortune to work with a great team of economists, statisticians, and data scientists who work to translate data into insights for the veterinary profession so that they can have a more successful, more thriving career.
That sounds like a lot of things that I chose veterinary medicine not to have to do. So I'm very glad that there are people like you doing that, because turning data into insights is definitely not my forte. I like feelings.
That's perfectly fair. And giving my cats medicine is my worst nightmare. So
here we go.
Skills for everybody.
Yeah. Well, we're really glad to have you. And for those of you listening who haven't joined us before, this is a 5-part series, which is brought to you by Care Credit and Pets Best. And in this series, we're discussing how both veterinary teams and pet owners can approach veterinary care in a more proactive way. So that includes how to guide our clients to think ahead when they're making decisions with their pet's future health and needs in mind, and also giving them the information and the financial choices they need to help them plan for how to pay for that care. And today we're going to focus on that second part, which is the finances. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to generalize a little bit in saying that, using myself and most of my colleagues as an example, a lot of people just don't like talking about money. I think veterinary medicine, especially, we have a lot of people that just try to avoid talking about money. But clearly, we all have to. So, Matt, would you mind starting us off with just a little bit about how you think we could make the money discussion a little bit easier for us?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. And thank you again, Katie, for the opportunity to be here and talk with you. And I think I'm going to have difficulty not smiling through all this, even though your listeners can't see that, because I, Franklin, who I met just before we started recording this podcast, I can hear him snoring gently through this.
My dog is snoring on my lap right now. I'm sorry.
It's the perfect picture of adorableness. I love it. It's gonna soothe me throughout the rest of my day. You know, I think where we begin with this is we have the conversation. I think this is critical, to have open, candid conversations and discussions with clients over the cost of veterinary care. One of the statistics of the many that I often talk about is that only 1/3 of pets are regularly seeing a veterinarian at least once a year. And that says nothing of the 2/3 that aren't in compliance and maybe going even once a year. And we know the reasons why. AVMA has looked into this. Other organizations have conducted surveys. And there's kind of two big things that are driving this. One is they don't see the value, that they think they can get the value elsewhere. And that's where e-commerce is coming in. And the second one is they don't think they can afford veterinary care. Either way you look at this, this is a fundamental discussion around cost and price and value. And so it's so instrumental that we talk about the cost of veterinary care with pet owners, with our clients, to help address that. And you know, the example I often give up is you know, in this information age that we are in, you know, price and transparency on cost is everywhere, right? Like, you go to Amazon, not only do you know the cost, obviously, of what it is that you're buying, but you've got product reviews, product descriptions, alternative product offerings. Amazon didn't become successful because they didn't tell you how much something costs. They became successful because they told you that and so much more. And so as veterinarians, as practices, we need to have these conversations.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I hadn't really thought about that. It's like when you're shopping for things now, you can compare to literally everyone else, it seems like. You can scan barcodes with your phones and stuff, and you just can't do that with VetMed. And, you know, I think perception of value is really difficult to convey sometimes, you know, when it comes to vet care, because we feel like the value should be obvious, and clearly it isn't always obvious. So what are some tips that you have for how we can bring it up in ways that make our veterinary team members comfortable and also will convey to clients what we need to as far as the cost of care and why that cost is what it is?
Definitely. And to touch on something you said, I think it's always that which we think is most obvious, which often isn't.
Yeah. For sure.
It's not what you say. It's what your audience hears. That's really important. You can be saying one thing, but they're hearing another. I think it's obvious my son should do the dishes, but it's not quite so obvious to him. He's got to understand the value and the return on that effort, I think. You know, I think it begins with understanding what is the most important asset that a veterinarian has. And it's the relationship that they have with the client. No other provider of veterinary services, care, pet services has that level of trust and relationship that a veterinarian has. It's not unlike, you know, a person with their doctor or a pediatrician. It's very visceral and it's very real. And I often hear in conversations in this hyper-competitive environment that we find ourselves in, as you know, Amazon just announced, you know, this week that they're in the human pharmacy environment now, and the media is abuzz with that. And you know, I'm sure the thought is when are they going to go into pet pharmacy? Chewy's already there. And I hear from practices struggling, you know, I can't be Chewy, I can't be Amazon. And my response is, you're right, you can't be Chewy or Amazon, but you know what, Chewy and Amazon can't be you either. And so what you have is this relationship, this connectivity, this ability to generate a trusted relationship with the pet owner that is unparalleled. And that trust begins and has a role to play in those conversations around cost of care, where it's no longer just a price on a website. You are able to add context. You are able to add humanity and a human element to that. And I think that is where it begins. And I think we should also understand that not having those conversations not only doesn't create trust, it hurts that level of trust, right? We've all had those experiences where we've gone to buy a car and the last thing the salesperson is talking about is the cost of this car. They're talking about the options and the add-ons and the great things about this vehicle. And that's all well and good, but you know, in your mind, you're just not quite sure you trust this person because the one thing that's one of the most important things to you hasn't been discussed, and that's the cost of that vehicle. We have to make that a part of our regular conversations. All the more so because we know pet owners aren't budgeting for veterinary care, not the way that they should, not at a macro, not at a generalized level. And so the need to have those conversations to communicate cost and options as well, to the extent that they're available, is going to play a critical role there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we talk a lot about preventative care, you know, vaccines and heartworm prevention and everything that we try to do to keep pets healthy, but planning for the financial aspect of it is also preventative and proactive, as we've been talking about in this series, because without that planning, we're not going to get any of the other stuff. And that relationship is going to seriously be injured. When I was in vet school, at least, so 10, 15 years ago, we were learning that vets should not be the ones to talk about money with the clients, that should be a team member's job or a manager's job, and the vet should separate themselves from the cost. Do you think that's true?
I think a lot is changing. You know, I think, to go back to what I said, pet owners aren't budgeting for vet care overall. I think, you know, some may have plans, but many don't have an understanding of their payment options. Mm-hmm. And many have heard of things like pet insurance, but they aren't receiving the level of information that they might need or desire from their veterinarian. And what's clear is pet owners appreciate when you demonstrate understanding. And it's more credible later on when you state later that you want to help make veterinary care affordable for them, if you're the one that starts the conversation.
Yeah.
So this is part of the strategy to get at your question again, is the best way in is to address cost head on. And you can do it as the veterinarian, as this physical relationship that you have with your clients, unlike online and virtual, is that you can do it in a very empathetic way. And I think with few exceptions, most pet owners aren't or don't know that they can discuss cost of care or financial concerns with their veterinarian. And I think another strategy and approach here that's going to set the veterinarian apart is being able to empower your client to ask questions about cost of care by starting that conversation, by bringing it up, by asking them to share whatever financial concerns they might have so that it's less intimidating for them.
Yeah, that's a great point that you just said, that a lot of people don't realize they can talk about it with us, because I think by separating ourselves from that conversation, we've sort of limited the ability that we have to relate to clients in that way. And I know I've seen doctors, you know, sort of alternative care doctors who weren't covered by insurance, and they didn't come right out and talk to me about the cost of things. And I wish that they had, because that's got to be relevant. None of us are in a lot of us are not in a situation where that doesn't matter. And I know a lot of us too are afraid of talking about money too much. So we're afraid that by bringing it up ahead of time, you know, by starting the money discussion, that we're emphasizing the cost of care rather than just kind of like letting it slide in later, you know. But I feel like over-communication is probably, it's better to err on that side. Would you agree?
Always better to err on that side. I think that's one of those few things that's a universal constant, right?
Yeah.
Whether with your client or with your spouse, you know, over-communication is never going to hurt you. I think that's an extremely legitimate point. And one of the things I think we're missing the boat on is over-communicating the options, right? I mean, we'd be doing ourselves a disservice if we just said, this is the cost of care. And then leave it at that. I think it's making sure explore, take the time to make sure that the pet owner understands the options with respect to the cost of care and how to pay the different options to pay for that cost of care is really important. And when you present things as options, you know, no person likes a 0-1 zero sum game, right? No one likes, it's either this or that. People like to know that there's a comfort in a range and knowing, well, you could do this, you could do that. Here, I'm here to tell you what your options are. You're here to share with me your story and what your personal circumstances are, and then you can help, you know, them make the best decisions as possible for themselves.
Yeah, that's. Let's talk about options now. We will certainly discuss payment options, but I wanted to just touch on pet insurance real quick, because pet insurance is something that I would have thought, given where I was when I graduated, that we'd be seeing more of now. But I feel like it's just kind of stayed where it was for a long time, and I feel like veterinary teams and vet med in general has kind of mixed opinions about pet insurance. Maybe we're not talking about it like we should. Why do you think that might be?
Well, a number of reasons here. I mean, to get to the first one around, it's growing. It's growing quickly. It's growing fast on a small base. And yet, to your point, it's not quite as far along as we see in other areas like, you know, UK and Canada. You know, I think there's a number of reasons why. I think it comes down to, you know, a big one is social and cultural. I mean, just the word insurance kind of invokes reactions in people, right? And, you know, and I think in countries that have a more social insurance web, it's viewed more favorably and less antagonistically there. But putting that aside, because you're not going to change society or culture, you know, I think we're not quite having the proactive conversations that we ought to be having about pet insurance. You know, AVMA, we've done studies on this and others and surveys and talking with pet owners, and there is a lack of awareness of it, or they've heard about it, they just don't understand what it is and how it works. And what we also know from this is, you know, they don't want to go to a website to read about it. They want their veterinarian to talk to them about it. And I'm not saying they're not looking to buy pet insurance from their veterinarian. We all know that that's a whole other issue, and we're not in that. What they want is a veterinarian to explain to them what pet insurance is and maybe a little bit about how it works, and or refer them to some resources that they can go so that they can learn about it on their own as well.
Yeah, that's a great thing to bring up with clients too, is because I there's only so much we can talk about in the exam room, right? The more things we add to that plate, the longer the appointment gets and the farther behind we feel like we're falling. And so I think we skip this discussion a lot, but it is hard to just write down a website and send people there and expect them to do it when you're not giving them the context with which to absorb that information and make decisions. And I think insurance also has kind of a reputation, at least from what I've seen, of having people interested in it who would literally do anything for their pet. And no matter what the problem is, they're going to go to the ends of the earth for that pet, and the insurance is going to help them pay for it. But insurance does not have to be used that way. And in fact, I think a lot of the benefits of insurance are not necessarily falling into that category. Do you agree with that?
I do. And I think we've seen this in the data too, that when a pet owner has pet insurance, they end up going more frequently to the veterinarian and they end up getting more care for their pet because there's coverage around that. I mean, there's no big, we've got data and studies, but it's no big shock, right? I mean, just imagine a person. Of course, they're going to get more health care if they've got health insurance because they've got that tool and it's the same idea. And this is a win-win. The patient, the pet is getting care. And this goes back to that only one third of pets are seeing a veterinarian at least once a year. It helps to close that gap. It's obviously a win for the practice because the first priority is making sure that pets get the care that they need and pet insurance helps do that. But as an economist, I'm also saying often that we also need to focus on the prosperity of the practice. And if a practice isn't prosperous, if a practice isn't generating revenue, it's not going to be economically sustainable and it's not going to survive and thrive. And the last thing that we want is a practice to close, right? So that's not good for patient care either if there's no practice there. And so pet insurance, among many other tools like that, can help provide pet care, make sure that the pet is getting the care that they need. It supports the prosperity, the economic sustainability of the practice. And really, there's a win-win-win here because every pet owner wants to make sure that their pet is getting the care that pet, that loved one, that companion needs. And pet insurance can give that feeling of peace of mind that they know that they're covered in the event that they need to, and also the acknowledgement that their pet is getting regular care as well.
Yeah, absolutely. What about payment options? So where do you see other payment options such as care credit? Where do you see those fitting in?
Yeah, they have a tremendous role to play. You know, there's a concept, and not to get too jargony in economics, but, you know, expenditure smoothing. No one likes, and this is just, you know, economics likes to complicate things with jargon, right? But I mean, the idea here is no one likes to spend something all at once, right? We like to smooth that expenditure over time if at all possible. I mean, the classic example here is, you know, you go to get your tune-up on your car and then you end up with all these, you know, multi-$1,000 repairs. No one wants that, right? It disrupts the budgeting process and disrupts the household finances. Payment options have a tremendous ability, not just in the event of, you know, large single veterinary bills because of something that's emergent or urgent, but also in just general cases to help smooth that expenditure to be less disruptive on the budget. And so that they serve as a bridge for the finances of the household, but also for the veterinary care that the pet may need.
Yeah. And a point you just brought up is really important here, which is that it's not just for that big one-time emergency, but you can actually use it for vet care that just is going to happen. You know, your hotspot visit or whatever. It's good for vet care, not just for emergencies. But I think a lot of times we don't bring it up to clients until they're looking at a huge bill or until they're trying to decide if they can do the surgery to remove the tumor now or, you know, have the TPLO or whatever. And then everybody's stressed out and emotional. So going back to that topic of proactive rather than reactive care, it seems like maybe we should be handling our payment options a little bit differently.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's that preventative mindset, right? Where, I mean, from a healthcare perspective, we're very adamant and rightly so around advocating for preventative care. There are a number of reasons for that. And the same goes for finances. Having the opportunity to approach these financial tools and instruments to ensure that there is a bridge in the event that not just emergencies, but throughout the whole process of delivering veterinary care, that there's awareness and visibility to these. Because what you'll get if you don't take that proactivity is potentially a number of pet owners saying no, either saying no to that service that the pet may need, to the care that the veterinarian is recommending, or just say no and not going to the practice at all. And that brings me back to, again, that one third of pet owners that are only seeing a veterinarian at least once a year. And I think that proactivity with those conversations helps address some of those financial and value-driven concerns that we talked about.
What about wellness plans? We don't need to spend a lot of time talking about that, but that is something that seems to be pretty polarizing in the industry also, whether wellness plans are good or not good. And so what's your take on those? Do you see that they seem to help this idea of proactive care?
Well, we see that they do. And they're also playing an increasingly important role in the economics of the practice. I think we're still looking at in terms of, you know, what this translates to in terms of the overall care of the animal and the extent that this plays in generating good health over time. But I think what we are seeing at this point is that they do promote proactive veterinary care. And I think we're seeing a little bit of consumer behavior to this too. I think gone are the days of a la carte, right? I think what wellness plans do often, as I've seen successful ones do, is bundle, whether it's a dental care plan or a vaccine plan. There's some savings involved, at least perceived savings involved from the pet owner, where having those wellness plans is deemed quite valuable. And there's a peace of mind aspect of this too is, you know what, I'm on a wellness plan, so whatever my pet needs, I know it's going to be a part of that from a wellness perspective. And if there's a vaccine that's needed, they're going to reach out to me because it's part of that wellness plan. And it's not something I'm going to forget because I'm enrolled in that. So I think there's tremendous value in that.
There's a certain amount of, well, I already paid for this because it's included in my plan, so I should get it too. It's like that idea of if you've paid for something already, maybe you're more likely to do it. I don't know.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's a fundamental that people like to feel like they're getting a deal. Mm-hmm. It's a sort of fundamental of consumer behavior. I mean, this is where, again, we can look to someone like Amazon as being tremendously successful with their Prime membership.
Yeah.
It's sort of like a wellness plan in terms of how it operates. I don't have to worry about how much I'm going to spend on shipping because I'm a Prime member. So I can order 10 boxes, 10 orders in 1 month, and it's fine because I'm not paying for that. So I think we leverage those insights to drive behavior of the pet owner so that the best possible care is being received by the pet, by the patient.
Together, Care Credit and Pets Best are empowering a lifetime of care for more pets by helping clients be financially prepared. Our simple, flexible, budget-friendly choices work together to help them manage the cost of care. Routine to unexpected, first year to senior care. Providing financial care for pet parents supports lifelong care for patients. Learn more at carecredit.com/provider-center/veterinary. So one of the things that wellness plans, when we think about that, I'm always thinking about puppy and kitten visits, right? Because it's when they need the most vaccines and, you're kind of rolling this wellness package out to owners so it's not so intimidating to have to come in four times or whatever for vaccines. It all just seems like it's part of the plan. But that also lets us bring up money at this very early stage where hopefully everybody's healthy and we're just kind of trying to encourage that idea of look ahead, we're here when you need us, here's how we're going to make it easier for you. So I do feel like that helps start that discussion in a way that maybe we don't always do if we don't have the advantage of that wellness plan. But one thing that I wanted to ask you is I've noticed when I talk to my clients about pet insurance and about payment plans and just finances in general, I feel like people can get they almost get embarrassed sometimes if they do end up spending a lot of money, or it's almost like they don't want to admit that it's fine with them to spend all this money. It's like there's a stigma in society about people who spend a lot of money on their pets' vet care. Do you feel like that's true?
Yeah. Well, I think there's a lot of stigmas around finances and money generally.
Yeah.
And especially when you're talking about, something that's like healthcare, whether it's for your child or just your pet, it's kind of awkward talking about, well, what does that cost? And that's where I say being proactive and empowering and maneuvering that conversation so you're not putting it on the pet owner to start that conversation, because they're already going to be feeling awkward. And the language and the words make all the difference in the world, right? Like, so pharmacy is great at this. They change the nature in which they have conversations with patients. No longer do they ask you when you're picking up your prescription, do you have any questions? Because what they found is that patients were saying no, because they felt like, well, I'm not smart enough, or I don't know what I should be asking. And instead, they pivot the language and they say, what questions can I answer for you today? And just that layer of subtlety opened up the gateway for a conversation where the patient would pause for a moment and ask a question that could potentially make life-saving differences. And so again, I go back to having this addressing this head on. We shouldn't be afraid to say veterinary care is expensive. We shouldn't be afraid to say that, because we're in an environment where, you know, 40% of households might struggle to accommodate a $400 surprise bill. You know, I mean, how often are people complaining about the cost of a gallon of milk or a gallon of gasoline, right? Like, veterinary care is expensive. And so we address that head on and say veterinary care, it can be expensive. And that's often a reason even the most loving of pet owners have to make difficult decisions around what they can and can't afford. But asking questions about cost of care is one way to make it more affordable for you and your pet. As veterinarians, we can work with you to offer flexible care and treatment options for your budget. And going into then, at that point, the options around what are the different financial tools and instruments that we talked about.
Yeah, and that's something that I would imagine you'd encourage us to be doing in more ways than just in the exam room, right? So maybe
absolutely
on the website, or directing people to resources before they need them, so they can kind of have that tool available for when they are emotional maybe and need a little bit more of a direct line to their options.
That's right. Absolutely. I mean, I think that's sort of the benchmark and hallmark of productivity, right? Don't wait for that conversation solely in the exam room. Take the opportunities throughout that life cycle of the relationship that you have with this pet owner to take that opportunity to communicate in those places as well.
And one of the last things I wanted to touch on is, you know, I think we're talking about stigmas around finances in general, around money in general, but I think there's also just sort of this idea of the like crazy pet owner who will do literally things that will create suffering for that pet and prolong that pet's life just to treat a chronic condition that can't be cured. And we have this, you know, I think a lot of pet owners have that image in their mind. If they are asking about pet insurance or financing options or referral, they feel like it's all or nothing, right? And I think that sometimes we just need more information to be able to make recommendations and let owners make the decisions that they need to make regarding their pet's care. But those decisions rely on information that costs money. And these financing options and pet insurance sometimes is basically just a method to let us get there.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, there are many difficult decisions. And, you know, here bringing it back again to the relationship between the pet owner and the veterinarian. If they can't go to the veterinarian to help guide them through those decisions, I don't know who else they can go to.
Yeah.
Because the veterinarian is going to be the most knowledgeable, the best equipped to address those questions. And you talk about end of life. I mean, there's no other harder, more difficult decision than that as a pet owner. I know I had to go through that myself a number of years ago. But it was such a calming experience in the sense of the veterinarian was a partner in that process. And what I needed was for them to almost say, it's okay for you to be thinking about this right now. And mm-hmm. this is an option for you. And it's difficult. And those are complicated and emotional conversations and discussions. But again, it's part of that life process that the veterinarian can build that relationship. And you know, of all the veterinarians that I've had, and I've been fortunate to work with a lot of veterinarians, of the pets that I've had through my life, it's been the one that helped me through that I still remember most clearly to this day. And so, you know, back to that comment I said, I can't be Chewy, I can't be Amazon. No, they can't be you either. And they're not going to be able to be there for the patient, for the pet owner during a decision like that. And that's where the veterinarian can rise and shine.
Yeah. And sometimes just a little bit more information can help us know and help the pet owner know and trust us when we say this is a reasonable decision now. And, you know,
that's right.
That doing more isn't necessarily doing better. And so looking for payment plans, payment options is not committing you to doing literally everything possible. It's saying, we're giving you the ability to make this choice. And I think that's so important and something that we don't sometimes convey to our clients when we're talking about payment. Sometimes we're paying for the peace of mind.
That's right. And I love what you said, you know, giving you the ability to make that choice that goes to, you know, empowerment that we talked about earlier. Everyone loves to be empowered to make decisions and feel informed and equipped. And that's where, you know, veterinarians again can contribute significant value in that relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Chewy's never gonna hold your hand. this has been a great conversation, and I would like to ask you one more thing, which is close to my heart, and I know close to a lot of the hearts of my colleagues. We could call this our Keep It Brief segment, but you can be as brief or as lengthy as you like. But I'd like to ask you how you feel like this proactive approach, especially when it comes to learning to talk more freely and more openly about finances, relates to the topic of the wellness of the veterinary team. Do you feel like they're connected?
I do. They're wholly connected, and this is a wonderful opportunity to be proactive too. You know, we've talked a lot about the finances of veterinary care and that relationship with the pet owner, veterinary team, veterinary well-being. This is a huge topic of discussion here, and this is where you might have asked me to be brief. I mean, this is a whole hours long conversation, because we know this is challenging right now. We've got the Merck well-being report. We've got others that suggest that well-being of veterinarians and veterinary teams isn't a challenging position. And now more than ever right now, I mean, we've all heard the stories of how busy veterinary teams are right now. You know, I recently adopted two more cats a couple of weeks ago. And getting there, it's wonderful. I think the dog is even starting to get used to them now. But, you know, going to the veterinary practice, and of course, it's curbside care only right now, but goodness gracious, the lot was completely full. And the time that I was there, it never stopped being full. And I could see the frenetic pace of the team as they're coming in and out of the practice to pick up animals, to bring them back, to deliver information. And you could see everyone off and on their phones as well, talking to connectivity to the practice. It's hard to operate at that sort of pace. And you know that not everything is easy here as well. There may well be some complicated cases that are going on that are also inducing stress and strain. So, you know, the point here is being proactive in addressing the wellness of the team is going to be critical, and it's going to address the economic sustainability of the practice too. I've often said this: people first, always. Everything else follows, whether that's performance, economic performance of the practice, whether that's delivery of the best quality care to patients in the practice. If you put your teams and your people first, everything else falls in line. That means having proactive conversations with your team. How are you doing? What's going well? What could be even better yet? What do you need from me? How can I help? Those open-ended questions with the members of your team can reveal amazing things there. We just have to be proactive as managers, as leaders, as owners of these practices to proactively have those conversations.
Yeah, absolutely. And a huge source of stress for us is always when clients can't pay for care. And so having these slightly uncomfortable conversations, maybe at the beginning when we're not used to it, can really reduce that discomfort later. And I think we all go home happier if we haven't had a big sad case where a client couldn't pay for care, and that just affects the whole team for so long. So
it does. And we've heard a lot, I think, over the last many months for the many different trials that we've endured this year, that we've got to get a lot more comfortable being uncomfortable.
Yes. We're getting a crash course in that this year.
We're getting a crash course in that. But something to keep in mind, because it is awkward being uncomfortable, is comfort is a virtue that the vulnerable don't have. Whether it's the vulnerable in your team because they're stressed out, or it's the vulnerable of the pet owner that is facing some really tough financial decisions, they don't have the benefit in the virtue of being comfortable. And so if we just kind of reflect on that, I think it makes it easier for ourselves to be a little bit more uncomfortable in that type of environment, knowing that.
I love that. I love what you just said. So I think that's a good place to wrap up. Matt, thank you so much for joining us.
a fantastic time. Thank you so much, Katie. You take care.
You too. And thank you to Care Credit and Pets Best. As a reminder, this is a 5-part series that they're bringing to us, which touches on all aspects of providing a lifetime of care for pets and their people. So check out our other episodes if you haven't already, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks again to our sponsor and to today's guest for joining us. And thanks to you for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, you can find us wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. While you're there, please make sure that you subscribe, rate, and review. We would appreciate if you leave us all of the stars. You can also listen to podcasts on our website at cliniciansbrief.com/podcasts. And you can drop us a line at podcasts@briefmedia.com. Clinicians Brief Partner Podcasts is a Brief Media production.